Blog Talk Radio.
Get ourselves squared away here. Hello and welcome to Masonic Effects. Just a nice place to, it's a good opportunity to lay back a bit, have a sip of your favorite, and relax and listen to some jazz and to a commentary from the likes of me and some poetry, which is there to do just what that poetry does for the world, to give us another level of expression for those who sometimes feel that they're missing something. Walking through lately, here we are focused primarily on the romantic poets of English literature, simply because it allowed for the expression of feeling. And you can imagine being in a world where that had not been done. Imagine what that would be like. not that you and I should take it for granted. There was a period when this didn't happen, just as there was a period in life where mathematics hadn't been widely taught and a lot of the ciphering that builders used was considered magic. Well, of course, because you could replicate these unusual, unnatural designs. A right angle, can you imagine? And a triangle or a pyramid, angles that you could calculate over and over. Imagine that. Life goes on, and we can be fascinated by the bits and things that are left behind, as if anything is ever truly left behind. It's just a moment in time. And today we're going to scratch the surface of that moment in time with some ancient poetry. Imagine a time when all the poets just went by one name, like Cher, or just one name, Elton. Just think about that. That carry, that currency. This is for the work of the day. We're going to be reading the work of Virgil. It was a commission piece that he did. And this is written at a time, turmoil in Rome after the murder of Julius Caesar. So we're going to get into a little bit about that. And here he is writing these, what's been known through history as bucolics or eclogues from ancient Rome. The 10 pastoral poems was Virgil's first major work, and this is in 57 BC. So we get to listen back, and what strikes me is whether the work is so sophisticated that it resonates today, or that there's just similarity I have difficulty with that, making everything gender specific. These ideas seem to be of the human condition because they echo through time. This is, as they say here, I'm reading from ancientliterature.com. It's cool. It's a collection. That was Virgil's first work, and it's haunting, enigmatic verses on rustic subjects provided the inspiration for the whole European tradition of pastoral poetry. But their political element and their commentary of the recent period of Roman history also made them very popular in their own time. Because, as we know, poets and writers and actors have been for millennia exposing the raw truth to power, only doing it through the arts. Whether it's a paintbrush or a hammer and chisel or... So this is the eclogue 2 we're going to get into. Alexis, it's about a relationship, and it's very touching. I think you'll like it. But before I go, I get into this too much, we have belonging. I seem to be plagued by this, chased by this idea of belonging. I'm okay with belonging to a fraternity, but not in any way where it might be restrictive to my thinking or yours, or a form of censorship, or if it is as I and many of us tend to perceive it, a matter of exploration, asking questions that wouldn't ordinarily be part of a person's life. It's not to say it wouldn't happen, but to have it so organized and concentrated as the ancients did for us is just sublime. And yet what I see today is far from it. Huh? I have in the world of masonry, there are ancient sites, old sites that revere, that show the not just a casual respect or a respect that I can spare a moment, but the sincerity of dedication, of piety, of reverence, is that apart from the materialism, apart from the facades and things that are truly amazing to see what's done as a homage to what's been done in the past as homage to the ways of Freemasonry, is nothing short of wonderful. But it is exclusive, and it is baggage, gender specific and exclusive. But truly, if you hung me by my ankles over a vat of hot chocolate and said, tell us all these secrets, well, there's not much to tell. Today, if somebody did that, I would suggest they're just being lazy. If you want to find something out, here's the secret of masonry. Roll up your sleeves and do it, you lazy sod. If you're thinking that you're going to find some discoverable mastery of life, the elixir. And then there's lots of people that will sell you that. You don't need to come to the door of a Masonic lodge. The crowd around the door is fascinating. The clamor, the being drawn by the marquee, and then being as if surprised. Now, I've wrestled with this, and anybody, and here to the world, I'm exposing a bit of the thinking here in North America. So if you gain a sense of moral high ground from listening to this, so be it. I do that all the time listening to news from the United States. Ugh. We're not so different, but we are enormously curious and interesting creatures. Depending on the level of abstraction, when you get to a certain level, the texture doesn't really show up. Is this all things for all? And I think it's pretty good. It's like anything that you could dedicate yourself to, I think, is all things. I often like to think of that sentiment, I guess, that Bill Evans would talk about as he was learning the piano. And when you listen to his work, it was almost seamless, almost, the emotion was just coming off the keys. It's like he got it. He got it. He found it. He discovered it. Being able to talk about masonry in a sterile environment without feeling or without the expression of emotion, I think is one of the more interesting efforts to disguise individual shortcomings. My goodness, if we went around the world, went through our day in touch or relating to our emotional state, throw our little hands in the air, jazz hands, and declare that this would be chaos. Well, you're guessing. You're affected and influenced by your emotional state anyway. There's nobody that isn't. You're expressing emotion constantly in your tone, in your manner, in your avoidance. And some pay far, far too much, spend far too much time in their own head living there. Oh, let's just step back. It's not about that notion of comparison. This is a hard work is to absorb. Let this rinse over you. And then ask the question. Stand in the rain. Stand in the warm summer rain and listen to the sounds. And don't run to hide from it. Experience it. What's your state of mind then? Silly. Who would in their right mind would do that deliberately? Or find a place that is beautiful to you, that you see something that is just appealing. And how does that feel inside? Why is it that when we walk into a forest, our blood pressure drops and our breathing stabilizes? Why is that? It just is. Circadian rhythms? How? We're so much more sophisticated than that, aren't we? How do those rhythms affect us? The hell with that. That's just a silly idea. And chakras? That's just a silly idea. Except when you ask the question, chakra can provide. And I'm not so smug the older I get to stop asking questions of it. Even when it's like somebody asking me if I believe in a bit of science, if I believe in the line. I never really thought that science mattered, whether I believed in it or not. It exists. Thank goodness. There's a science to what we're doing. And that is filtered through the lens of your experience and your life and your ability. That's what it enriches, what we have in Freemasonry. Where it's particularly, there's a beautiful, beautiful part when, and I've been saying this for some time, to a lot of people ignore me, which I find very flattering. But discovery, it enriches the experience when we realize that we are individual in this. That uniformity, well, I like that too. Here where I am, gentlemen, Masonry is timid. It doesn't lack confidence, but it's very timid. We have Masonry with training wheels on. And as there's a Jewish saying about this, you know, you don't feed meat to a baby. We're like the baby, and we have to come along gradually. Let's get into something much more interesting than this. I'll give you a bit of Bill Evans, and we'll pick this up. I think you'll like the show today. I really do. I'm certainly happy to see so many people from so many countries tuning in. Cheers. Works, doesn't it? You can see that he connects with us through the keys. Beautiful work. Beautiful. I was trying to talk about something without being tedious about it. Trying to talk about comparison. It's hard, especially if you have that, one has that sense of needing to fit in, to experience some confirmation or acknowledgement. We're doing all right. It's hard to not to do that, but I find, and perhaps you do, we share this opinion that sometimes people seem to waste a great deal of their talent comparing themselves to the performance of other people. You know, I think in life, I've often seen very interesting things happen when a person is allowed the dignity of their own privacy to work with an idea. If you're going to be inspired, please, you know, that's not an unusual kind of a thought, but select and share the company of people that are going to in some way enrich your experience. No, I don't mean that in a material way. You know, I have enough of that, and I'm sure you do. Somebody will extend a hand when there's some advantage in it for them. But other than that, they will forget your name. You know the type. Yeah. My old grandfather taught me that when I was about 8 or 9. He began talking to me about hypocrites. And I thought it was an interesting word because I hadn't heard something like that before. But he was explaining to me what they sounded like. It's a little lesson that's always stuck in the back of my mind. Don't compare. You know, at some point, you want to pick your idols or your ideals. Pick people that you think you would most like to be if you could. And think about why. What is it about the individual that is appealing to you? And then you can, if you're drilling into it, simply ask yourself what the difference is between them and you, and then ask yourself how much of that is just you know, wishful thinking on your part. They're so much more intelligent than I am, is usually that bromide. I'll just wallow here in my own self-loathing and get by with that. Go away. Lazy thinkers do that. I meet a lot of lazy thinkers. People that are quite capable, but they just don't apply their logic. Give me a quick answer for what's troubling me in my life. But oh my goodness, don't expect me to do the work first. Do the work, you lazy thinker. Often what we see is a pure, raw, magical genius is a product of enormous amount of hard work, of effort, of attention to detail. And what's the difference between that person and you is that, or me, is that a spark, a motivation, a drive? Is it, as I get older, that feeling that I'm running out of time and there's so much to learn and so much to know? Silly, silly old boy, aren't I? I think it's a little more of one and a little less of other for all of us. But the joy, the satisfaction, is if all these things are rubbing off on you, if you're thinking about, so you do pick up some biographies or you have this, you know, these wonderful role models. What is it about them that appeals to you? Well, give it a little more than just a passing thought. Is it the celebrity? Is that what's driving you? You want to be recognized. You want the fame, but you don't want to do the work to get there. You don't want to be creating the music, whatever your form of music is that turns heads, that makes people want to stop. Not because of some clever advertising, but because what you're producing is remarkable and beautiful. Not because your fame is manufactured. You know, big corporations have learned that magic, how to manufacture fame and celebrity. But because what you're saying has appeal to imagine that's between you and this performer or musician that is not known to anybody. Eh? Oh my goodness, why would we possibly be satisfied with that, with the songs that he writes? Or he's not famous. The illusion, always the comparison. And in masonry, it's interesting because it's like we begin with the comparison. You're made, you're told, you know, here's some answers to these questions. It'll get you in the door. But after that, realizing that it's the questions that are interesting, not the answers. Well, that's just mischievous, isn't it? I pick up on those themes of comparison here in this commentary. Surround your mind with beauty. That's what I call it. Begin by allowing yourself the dignity of being a student. Professor Brody taught us that. This beautiful, beautiful old school English professor teaching literature to a bunch of motley students. He was absolutely wonderful. Taught me and my classmates what respect was. Absorb information. Learn from the ideas of others about ways to re-examine the world in ways that amaze and satisfy those wondering if life is more than what is seen. The ideas of a person who examined existence, knowledge, and morality, as Nietzsche did, might prompt us to read for ourselves and draw our own conclusions, if only they weren't so deep. For many, nothing about our private thoughts permit us to question until we see the Newtonian philosophical basis being exercised in thinking in the late 18th century. At what point did we pause and codify Freemasonry? Was the Union of 1813 a step forward in that regard, or did we begin to see patterns and connections much, much earlier that were not necessarily simpatico, waiting for confrontation to give us reason to rethink? Today, historians are helping us understand the value of primary source material. So much conjecture has brought the use of secondary sources into tall repute. Compounded by the impatient researcher, we are left with illusions of history. I resent it when an author attempts to present history in order to please me so that it would sell. I resent that. So much conjecture. Asking our questions not once, but twice. And a third, each time brings us closer to truth and objectivity. Are we even conscious we do the same to our own history? How much of it is temporary impressions? Oh, and to think that our recall today about our life at any other point is just that keen because it's in our mind? Really? Our brains have an ability to retell a story in a way that's more consistent. How much of it are temporary impressions? If we examine Masonry, including the unique units within this matrix, be prepared to find life is predictable, not as dramatic as one might like. Hindsight might lead to insight, but more likely it will be tedious, stark, but relevant. Putting ourselves under the microscope does not mean we abandon the ability to assess what we find and be amazed that we find anything at all. How does a man with insight conduct himself in public with purpose and confidence? This is the idea that this little subtlety that is so often understated in Masonic terms, gentlemen and ladies, about that quiet solitude, the person that is confident within their own skin, enough not to be bringing attention to themselves, but confident within their own skin because they understand, and they understand their place. Fatalist? I don't know. I don't think. It's like, I don't think. Surround your mind with beauty. Well, many, many days I'll be annoyed by something going on. But more days than not, I'm like you. I was searching for the harmony. And then I realized it's so obvious. It's right there with us all the time, if we collectively allow it to happen. Yeah, that's my stumpage for this year. Allow it to happen. Stop the force feed. Take all the authority and power out of the room. The power is with you. All these instruction, these tedious things, they don't matter. You're not going to stop them, but they don't matter. Because what you're trying to achieve is within. And nobody's going to make the decision for you to connect to that, to the harmony. You do that for yourself. And for, it seems, for others. Always a little more mysterious, mysterioso, no pun intended. This is Thelonious Monk to take us to an emotional state through his music, almost spiritual if you listen close enough. from a live performance a long time ago.
Thank you.
In that piece make it work, don't they? Yeah. Here, a voice, a mind from thousands of years ago. This is the poetry of Virgil today. Hey, we'll explore some of the classic pieces. We still have the work of Horace and Sextus Propertius, you know, we haven't, Lucretius, we haven't touched on any of this, and not quite sure why. Virgil, his poetry immediately became famous in Rome and was admired by the Romans for two primary reasons, allegedly. First, he was regarded as their own national poet, spokesman of their ideals and achievements, and second, because he seemed to have reached the ultimate of perfection in his art, his structure, his diction, his meter. And for the latter reason, his poems were used as school textbooks. And the first century Roman critic and teacher Quintilian recommended that the educational curriculum should be based on Virgil's works. A few years after his death, Virgil was being imitated and echoed by the younger poet Ovid. Well, I don't know about you, but when I look at Ovid, I'm thinking, he's been influenced by the riffs of the old dog. What a tribute, though. Ovid imitating. And this process continued throughout the Silver Age. The study of Virgil in the schools has lasted as long as Latin has been studied. Here's the reason we see. By the 4th century, a new reason for admiration was gaining ground. The store of wisdom and knowledge discovered by scholars in Virgil's poems, for which he was saluted not only as a poet, but as a repository of information. This aspect figures largely in the writings of the writer and philosopher Macrobius. He was around about circa 400. Those of Virgil's commentator Servius in the late 4th and 5th century, and those of many, many later writers. Allegorical interpretations began to gain ground and under Christian influence became especially widespread through the Middle Ages. The two main bases for Christian allegorization were the fourth eccolo, believed to be a prophecy of the birth of Christ, and the near Christian values expressed in the Aeneid, especially in its hero, a man devoted to his divine mission. And the culmination of this view of Virgil's place of honor in Dante's Divine Comedy as the poet's guide through hell and purgatory, up to the very gates of paradise. So, Virgil's influence on English literature has been enormous. We'll get around to studying a piece that was inspired by Edmund Spenser's The Faery Queen. We haven't done that for a long time, eh? And the Aeneid was the model for John Milton's Paradise Lost. Imagine here, I could go on, but I won't. These are 10, the Bucolics, is a collection of pastoral poems by Virgil. And it was his first major work, 37 BC. Remarkable. But there was a political element that shouldn't be lost. This is a commentary on the recent turbulent period of Roman history, also made them very popular in the Roman time. This is the Bucolics, as they were called, were nominally written an imitation of the Bacchylia by the Greek poet Theocritus, written almost 200 years earlier, the title of which can be translated as On the Care of Cattle. Charm, eh? Makes you think. There's nothing about this that doesn't. This is a story, I'm reading from the second eclogue, tells the story of how Croydon wooed Alexis, a handsome boy who rejected Croydon's rustic intentions. Now, what we listen to here is this outpouring of love. Hmm? And no, this isn't to, this has nothing to do with male sexuality, I think. It starts like this. Croydon, the shepherd, burned for lovely Alexis, his master's delight, and knew not whether to hope. So he went continually among the dense beech trees, canopied with shadows, alone with vain passions. There he flung these artless words to the woods and hills. Oh, cruel Alexis, do you care nothing for my songs? Have you no pity on me? You force me to die at last. Now even the cattle seek the coolness in the shade. Now even the green lizards hide themselves in the hedge, and Thestylis pounds her perfumed herbs, garlic and wild thyme, for the reapers weary from the fierce heat. And while I track your footprints, the trees echo with shrill cicadas under the burning sun. Wasn't it better to endure Amaryllis' sullen anger and scornful pride? Menalcas, though he was dark and you are blonde, oh, lovely boy, don't trust too much to your bloom. The white privet falls and the dark hyacinths are taken. I'm scorned by you, Alexis. You don't ask who I am, how rich in cattle, how overflowing this snowy milk. 1,000 of my lambs wander Sicilian hills. Fresh milk does not fail me in summer or in winter. I sing, as Amphion used to sing to Dirce, calling the herb's name, herds home in the attic, I'm not so hideous. I saw myself the other day on the shore when the sea was calm without breeze. If the mirror never lies, I have no fear of deafness as you, with you as judge. Oh, if you only live with me in the lowly countryside in a humble cottage, shooting at the deer and driving back the flock of geese with a green mallow. Together with me in the woods, you'll rival Pan in song. Pan first taught the joining of many reeds with wax. Why not at least choose to start weaving what you need, something out of twigs and pliant rushes? You'll find another, Alexis, if this lad scorns you. Today, when I read this, it's troubled. It's troubling. I think we are to read this as with that sense not presence of risk, but of a gentility and a sensitivity. But simple? I don't think so. I think it's a troubling poem. Not in terms of the content, but the subject matter, but the story. Here.
Mm-hmm.
Have to come back to it. Dexter Gordon. If you've ever wondered about our relationship with governance, we could argue that it is necessary, but it isn't the key that unlocks thought or reveals insight or enlightenment. It's structure, it's scaffolding that enables us to get the job done. But it's not a replacement, it's not a substitution for your own structure, your own internal structure, your ability. This particular passage that there's limits to Margaret Jacob. I'm not saying that she's the bee's knees of history, but her perspective is quite worth considering. Here today, we look at an understanding of the workings of our Constitution. And we began with suspicions, the suspicions that the fraternity aroused on the continent from 1730s on. Cannot be explained solely by reference to its foreign and British associations, but they do account partially for the hostility. This British export also possessed distinctive characteristics of a civic or political nature, intimately related to its development in a specific political and social context, the values and mores shaped by the English Revolution. Now remember, just as Virgil's poetry was influenced by the events of the time, particularly and most recently was the murder of Caesar, here we see this similar, influenced by, of course, what? The burning of London, the two plagues, the beheading of Charles I. I mean, with markedly political language, the Constitution praises the reign of the Roman Emperor Augustus, using a contemporary parlance that signaled an identification with the Hanoverian and Whig regime, which had ascended to political dominance in 1714. Predictably, the earliest British leadership of the Grand Lodge, founded in London in 1717, tended to be court variety Whigs, that is, supporters of strong ministerial government, and by their own definition, the heirs of the Revolution of 1688-89. First and foremost, the new Grand Lodge sought to live by a constitution or constitutions, that is, statutes and rules, first published in 1723 and intended to govern the behavior of all lodges. These small private societies came to be seen as organized around a constitution in the post-1688 or parliamentary sense of the term. The goal of government by consent within the context of subordination to legitimate authority was vigorously pursued by the Grand Lodge of London and was demanded of all lodges affiliated with it. The goal of government by consent within the context of subordination to legitimate authority was vigorously pursued. Records of lodges throughout the first half of the century from London and the provinces attest to the seriousness with which they were to keep all and every rules, orders, and regulations contained in the Book of Constitutions, except such as have been revoked or altered at any quarterly communication or other general meeting, and also all such other orders, regulations, and instructions as shall from time to time be transmitted by us, our deputy for the time being, or by any of our successors, Grand Masters, or his deputy. The day-to-day working of this constitutional order meant elections by ballot, majority rule, except in unanimous vote for admission to a lodge, in all matters, one man, one vote, taxes in the form of dues, registration of membership, and not least, rules of social behavior, of civility, and of decorum to prevent anyone bringing scandal upon the society. Discipline was enforced through man-made rules and regulations. So if those of you out there listening have wondered about this notion of consensus, of elections, of within that framework, there's a subordination to legitimate authority. It's to put us into a context. It helps enormously. Well, I see that the magic is running out of the hourglass right now. We're coming to the end of the show. I hope that it's been making connections about our past, and that filter on through each and every one of us today. I don't like the tedium of extolling and exalting the benefits of Freemasonry. You do that on your own. And that's the complicated nature. It's easier to put us all in uniform and treat us as sheeple. Because if we actually started to acknowledge that everybody, you have agency and your own way of going about things, then my goodness, we're going to end up with what we have now. A work in progress, never-ending work in progress. Me, I want to return to what I first began, how we first started this program. Remember? that the harmony that we desire, it is there, only it's not out. It's not something that can be ordered. It's not about what's going on and how, who's the smartest. It's not all that silly competition. You know, when people get carried away for sharpening their pencil, my pencil is more sharp than yours today. It's nothing to do with that. It's like, what do? When you pick that pencil up, what do you do with it? That's masonry. So you're pouting, you're wondering about the harmony, and you're looking across this pond from where I am at these places that are just surrounded in mystery and myth. They're just complete idealizations. Of course, each of these organizations, each of these micro societies has a domestic work that has to go on. It's not very glamorous, but somebody has to take out the dustbin. The joy is within. It's not tolerance for substandard. No, it's not that. But it is complicated, isn't it? Delightfully, exquisitely complicated. And we're only showing part of the outline to the world here where I am. So wherever you are, whatever elements of the mystic arts exist in your heart and your mind, those values that are synchronized with Masonic beliefs, good. Keep doing what you do, because you're influencing us in a good way. We have work to do. We all do. The communication, absolutely essential. Today's been good. It's a good day to be us, isn't it? So I'll send you off for this week with the usual comment: take good care of yourself and commit acts of random Masonic kindness. It just will make the world a better place. And it wouldn't kill you to show the joy that is possible when even if you were walking down the street smiling and nobody in the world knows why, you do. Make the world a better place. I will look forward to seeing you next week here on Masonic Effects. Thanks for tuning in. Thank you.